My advice would be take the calculated risk, because I always calculate the risk every time I do something. What's my fallback if it doesn't work out? What's the opportunity that I'm gaining by taking this risk? What's the learning opportunity? I try to have this conversation a lot with younger staff.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
Let me ask you a question. What if you had a coach in your corner every week, helping you focus on what matters most, become a more effective communicator, and to lead well? That's the ideal behind Engineer Your Success Insiders, my private podcast for leaders who want practical tools, not just theory. Every week, in just 3 to 5 minutes, you'll get one story, one insight, and one action that you can use right away. The goal is to prepare you for those critical moments that matter at work and at home. If you're ready to take the next leap in your leadership, click the link in the show notes and join Engineer Your Success Insiders today. This is Dr. James Bryant, your coach in your corner. I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryant, your host for the show, and your guide to designing and living a life where you are winning at work and at home. And it is my pleasure to have a special guest today, Mr. Ken Micah. Ken, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks for having me. A little bit about myself. I'm currently working at Tetra Tech here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I'm a central area manager helping support our construction quality assurance team as well as soils lab, primarily working in the solid waste industry, but working all over the United States in the hazardous waste industry, trying to clean up old brownfield properties and turn them into new properties for new opportunities for the community that they're in.
Were there any major turning points in your career? Maybe you can take us through some different transition points in your career that you've made so far.
They started back when I was in high school even.
Okay.
Grew up in a small family business, a flower shop in the Milwaukee area of Wisconsin. When I was 16, one of my mom's employees said, "Hey, my husband is looking for somebody to help support their construction quality assurance projects this summer at an engineering firm." And my mom's like, "Well, my son needs a job. He's working part-time. He can really use a full-time job." And so literally that it was the introduction for me to get into the civil engineering industry. And I had no idea at 16 that this was going to become a career of mine. When I was trying to figure out what I was going to do post-high school, my father had previously passed, and I didn't know what to do because everybody else was already had a game plan. And throughout high school, I was helping take care of my father with the family business while with my brother and just a lot of stuff going on. And a really good friend of the family, who I call today a cousin, said, "Why don't you become a civil engineer? You already have the experience. You like being outside. You like construction. Why don't you come tour the university while I'm there?" Because she was graduating. And I did. And next thing you know, I'm going for civil engineering, which was a wonderful experience. Ended up graduating with a full-time job offer prior to graduating my last semester and ended up moving to Florida for 2 years to oversee a construction job, doing construction quality assurance again, but in remediation. From there, worked several years all over the country working on various remediation jobs. The next turning point for me was going back to get my master's in engineering management. While working full-time, while being on the road, and then eventually an opportunity has kind of landed in my lap about becoming a manager for the firm I was at, overseeing their field services team. And when they were bought, I had new leadership opportunities in management, ended up going over to another company that gave me the opportunity to start up an office from scratch, do the business development, do the recruiting, which was another wonderful opportunities. And then just continuing on from there, I had an opportunity from Tetra Tech to be a part of a team that they just acquired to help lead and take them into the next phase because they were primarily just small solid waste construction CQA. And now they're involved in the remediation aspects as well. All this was just taking a risk. Each opportunity has worked out very well. So I've been very fortunate in that regards.
That's a lot of great experience. So you may have people listening in, maybe they're just starting their career, maybe they're in mid-career, but they may be hesitant about making a change. What advice be to them?
My advice would be take the calculator risk, because I always calculate the risk every time I do something. What's my fallback if it doesn't work out? What's the opportunity that I'm gaining by taking this risk? What's the learning opportunity? The other aspect of it has been, and I try to have this conversation a lot with younger staff. I spent I had the 4 internships in the co-op. All of them were in the field. I was in the field almost 100% of the time. After graduating, I was in the field still for about 7 years. That's construction quality assurance. If you're going to be a construction professional, you need to be in the field. But hands-on experience was the best thing for me to see how things are built and work with different individuals. Working in the remediation industry, you're dealing with brownfield properties, a lot of people watching what's going on. You're dealing with a lot of different contractors, a lot of different clients, regulatory agencies. Just getting to work with a lot of different people with different goals, a lot of stakeholders have their own thing they're trying to get out of it. I think that helped me the emotional intelligence side of the industry as well. I would just tell them, get that experience. I got asked the other week, what's the thing that's missing from my career right now? And I just keep, and I told them my lack of experience in everything. While I might have done all this, there's still more for me to experience. There's so many lessons learned, whether they're positive or negative. There's just more experience that needs to be had for me to continue in my growth. And I get it where I've gone pretty far in just 17 years, but there's still so much to experience. I feel like that's probably the only thing holding me back, and the only time will give that.
No, I think that's great, particularly the advice to get that hands-on experience, because that is where the rubber meets the road. And that's where you see a lot of the nuances that you can't see on paper, that you can't see in the design, how things are actually functioning and working. You've started out this pursuit from a technical hands-on perspective, but as your career has continued to advance, it seems like you're getting a little bit more into strategic work. Mm-hmm. So how's that been for you?
That's been a lot of fun. It's definitely been a different approach, because as engineers, especially licensed engineer, you want to think about what is your risk management? How do you ensure that you're not taking on any risk for yourself, your company, the public? You know, as engineers, you know, we want to hold health, safety, and welfare the most number one thing in everything we do. But when you start looking strategically, there's a lot of risk because it's the unknown. It's challenging at times because you are letting go of what you know and trying to come up with calculated risk management, as well as trying to predict what the future will bring. It's not easy to predict the future, but you can use, you know, past practices, the data that you're seeing come through now, and try to formulate how that all plays into the future. Where's our client's risk? Where's the risk for our company? Is it recruiting? Is it other competitors? Or is it the general industry changing based on certain laws, regulations, federal funding, or where the private sentiment is at with different aspects of it?
Let's talk about your whole path and journey in volunteering.
Yeah, growing up, I was raised in a Catholic household where you're always supposed to be volunteering. I was volunteering from a young age. And then my father got sick. I saw people helping us out. As soon as he passed, it dawned on me like, oh my gosh, as a kid, I never realized how much volunteering means to certain individuals. Being a recipient of it, I realized paying it forward is going to be a huge part of my life. When I graduated from college and then moved to Florida for 2 years, I was like, all right, it's time to get involved with ASCE, because I knew of it as a professional setting. But getting involved with the younger member groups even, and I've noticed throughout the country, a lot of the younger member groups are very much in the community involvement, community advocacy. And so I started volunteering there, whether it was at a Ronald McDonald House in Orlando, making meals for families that were staying there because of their kids being sick, whether it was participating at the Science Museum or putting on field trips for the college students, just trying to help pay it forward in the community. Eventually moved back to the Milwaukee area where I was originally from and got involved there. I knew like 3 to 6 months out I'm returning. So I emailed the leaders and like, hey, I want to get involved when I get back. Next thing you know, I'm getting voluntold for various activities, which was okay by me because I was looking to get involved again. And so just constantly trying to get back to the community wherever I can, because I know that there's always somebody that needs help in our community. And if I have the time to provide insight, I like to do that because I know there's somebody that's going to get a benefit out of it, that, you know, hopefully they see the benefit of somebody volunteering to help them in the future so that they're willing to do the same.
What's been your most challenging or most rewarding project that you've worked on through your volunteer activities?
I would say the most rewarding project would be the STEM Expo. It was four of us that came together. It started as a fundraiser for hosting the MRLC, the Multi-Region Leadership Conference for the Central Region. And this was back when we had a fundraise to put on the social events. And the four of us came together. It ended up having several companies there. We put it on in the gym of a university. And we thought maybe we'll get 50, maybe 75 people. We had well over 100 people show up. We had so many volunteers that thankfully there's so many other people that have the same mindset as us. Let's get involved in the community. Since then, I've heard it's gone over 400 people in attendance now. And it's a free event. Different kids in the community that might not have access to different STEM-related fields. Yes, it's put on by ASCE of the local group. But it's not just civil engineering. There's different groups that are talking about electrical engineering, mechanical engineering. Various groups of medical professionals are there. And so you're literally letting the kids try, whether it's the first Lego League, the students from the university setting up their concrete canoe, their steel bridge. One of my favorite activities, because by trade I'm a geotechnical engineer, is showing kids, hey, if you stand on a paper roll from toilet paper, it collapses. But if you put sand in the middle, like a foundational support, you can stand on it and it supports your weight. Just helping kids understand the difference, breaking it down to what we do to simpler terms, help kids understand and see, hey, maybe I could be doing that when I get older. I know there's one company that brings survey equipment. The kids are learning about surveying and drones, showing the technology aspect of what we do. I think that's the greatest thing that's still going on in the community, and that I was able to walk away and let other future leaders take on the leadership role, because we can't develop our future leaders unless space is made by the other leaders. I think it's just a great thing that's still going on in the community down in Milwaukee.
That is great, man. I really do appreciate you sharing. You know, so that was the most rewarding. What about your most challenging?
I would say the most challenging aspect, especially being an ASCE, was being on the board of direction. And so I just came off the board of direction in October. I spent my 3 years on it. It was a wonderful opportunity. I met a ton of wonderful people from all over the world. We provide direction both to the staff that are helping put on all of our activities, as well as the other different committees, sections, branches, technical institutes, and so on. And the hardest thing was when you become a director, is you're told, okay, you are now voting and discussing things, not as an elected official from your region, from your constituency, but as for all members of the society. And that's where a lot of people struggle, even myself struggle, because you think that when you think about different things that are going on, you're like, okay, I want to support my local group because they need the most help. But that doesn't mean that that's the best thing for the greater society, for all of its members. And so there was a couple of times where I had to do a gut check and ask myself, is this truly, am I going to vote for my constituency or am I going to vote for the greater society? And I think that was probably the most difficult thing, because you, unless you're in that role, it's really hard to understand the challenges, the internal challenges you will have, you know, making those decisions.
Well, thank you again for your service to our profession and the society as a whole. In past conversations, I believe that you just recently finished your doctorate.
Yeah. So just over a year ago, I went back to school online and decided to go for a doctorate in business administration, emphasis in organizational leadership. As I've continued on in my career, it's been heavily involved in the technical side, still involved heavily on the technical side. But I've also been pushed heavily into the more of the leadership management roles. I saw it as adding more tools to the toolbox. And so that's why I went with it. And coming up with a dissertation topic, and that's mergers and acquisitions. And that I've gone through two mergers and acquisitions. One that I was a part of the team that was acquired, and then one a part of the team that did the acquiring. And I felt that, okay, you know, I've seen some things play out with this. I'd love to know more, because I think this is going to be a bigger thing in our industry, even just cultural change in the industry and with the mergers and acquisitions. And so I decided to do my dissertation on the leadership influence of cultural integration of mergers and acquisitions in the AEC space. And so I have finished up all my schooling, and now I'm going through the dissertation process of doing the research, and will hopefully be finished up in a couple months with everything, fingers crossed. But it's been a lot of fun, because I've learned a lot about myself as well, understanding not just the technical side, but, you know, like I indicated earlier, engineers were very good at risk management. We're very risk averse. And anytime you talk about M&A or cultural integration or cultural change, there is change. And that's, you know, that goes against what many engineers are really comfortable with dealing with, you know. And so really learning and get to know more of the psychological effect of it on the individual has been a lot of fun for me to learn.
What's one thing that surprised you when you started uncovering and doing research, and, you know, maybe something that even challenged an assumption that you made?
So one of the big things is the different leadership approaches that have been taken based on other research that's been done in the business industry, and hearing more and more that the transformational, while it might take more efforts early on, the transformational outside of the AEC industry has been very successful, or at least had greater success than with the transactional leadership involved.
Okay, so before you got into that, did you think that transactional was going to be better than transformational, or was it that transactional was the only thing that you knew?
Transactional was the only thing that I knew based on my experience. And that's very much how we've, you know, many leaders operate. It's like, okay, you do this, you go from point A to point B. At the end of the year, that means your pay rate is going to increase whatever percent that they're offering that year. You go from point B to point C, you might get a promotion. That's very transactional. On this date, you're now going to become this employee of this firm. And so that's pretty much how my experience has been. When that transformational is more on the lines of, okay, this is what this new opportunity is going to bring all of us, you know, if we all come together. And so just trying to see, help people see the bigger picture and why this is going to mean greater success, why the change has to happen for all of us to have greater success in our careers. That was very, very eye-opening to me, like, there's other ways we can do it.
It's interesting. How do you deal with the pressure of it all?
That's a great question. I've never been asked that, really. But I could tell you this, for myself dealing with it all, I am very much a regimented person where, okay, generally speaking, I get up at this time in the day, you know, I go work out before I even start the day. Whether it's, usually I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And that goes back to me playing high school hockey and having to be up at four at the rink on the ice by 4:30 before school. Since then, I just still work out. I get my whatever I need to get worked out in my head in that morning before the day. Go to work, you know, if I take the kids to school, if that's the type of day. And then at the end of the day, you know, when the work is over, you know, am I doing homework tonight? Or do I have the kids tonight? Do we have different activities? And I try to set up my schedule where it allows me both time to do everything I want to do, but also the other thing is time just to relax and hang out and just, you know, be at ease, you know, and try to also be, you know, when I am with my kids, they have my full attention. I'm not dealing with anything else. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to be fully present with them. I'm trying to be fully present at work. When I'm doing homework, I'm being fully present with my schooling. trying to get myself be fully present in everything I do is very important to me. You know, I grew up in a small family business. From the day I was born, I was there till the business was sold right when I graduated high school. And so, you know, there's different aspects. I appreciate everything my mom and my dad did growing up in the business. But I also know, too, there was many times where my parents sacrificed their time with me to be in the business. And so that's why I want to make sure that I'm providing them as much time as possible so that they don't have to deal with what I had to deal with. Not saying it was bad, but I just want to say we spend more time in different ways to spend my time with my kids.
Yeah.
So just trying to be fully present in everything I do.
Ken, there's a lot of similarities that we have in our story. My dad had a auto body repair shop. And so me and my brother and cousins, we all worked in the family business. And that was kind of his second job because he had to do whatever he had to do to make ends meet. So he ran that company. And he also had a position where he was like welding the panels on 18-wheeler trucks.
Okay.
So that was his thing. And he worked all the time. Mm. And as a kid, I felt that I wanted more time with him. I wanted him to be able to spend more time with me. Wasn't resentment, but there was this longing for more time. And so as I got older and started my family, that was one of the things when I had a big transition point and started to structure and design my life so that I could win at work and at home. One of those things that really stood out to me that I wanted to do is to be present with them, is to create the space and time to be present with them. And it, like you said, it wasn't that the experience growing up was a bad one. My dad had to do what he had to do. But the way that I responded to that was to say, okay, wait a minute. I want something different. So I need to make different choices. I need to design something different to have the life that I want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure your dad was the same way. My dad was the same way too. Wanting to do more than what they had with their fathers, just trying to do more, you know, and I'm sure that's why it sounds like we both have parents that came from the blue collar area. And now we knew that we wanted to do more and be able to provide more for our children. And so absolutely.
Yes. All right, getting back to dealing with the pressure, I think that we have to acknowledge that with great responsibility, and when you're balancing that responsibility at work in your home life, there is pressure that's there that we have to deal with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the great things that I do that helps with that pressure is working out. You know, for years, not in any, you know, competition ways, but powerlifting has been a big thing for me. But another aspect I've picked up heavily in recent years is yoga, meditation, pranayama. You know, one of the few things that I do to help with that type of pressure is when I wake up first thing in the morning, I'm meditating. I'm just meditating, starting out the day fresh. And just if I have to write stuff down to get rid of it, if I got to do some breath work, you know, I take care of it there. And then other parts of doing yoga, you know, a lot of people think yoga is just a fitness thing. It's not. It's more of a spiritual thing where I'm helping get rid of any negative energy, any scared anxiety energy, any sad energy. I'm pushing it out through the various movements, the various breath work, and just truly getting it out of my system. I ended up becoming a trained yoga professional and starting up a little side yoga business as well to help those that are in similar aspects of myself that might need a little help, not just going to class, you know, with 15, 20 other people in there, whether it's hot yoga or not, but just to have that one-on-one where they can just work through whatever stress they have, whatever pressures they have. And it's been a wonderful experience. And I've even done yoga at conferences. And so.
Wait. You've held a yoga session at a civil engineering conference?
Absolutely. In 2023 in Chicago, we did a chair yoga at the ASC convention. in the amount of civil engineers that I know, it's becoming very popular as well. And more are asking for it at different events. There's a lot of people that are going to yoga for dealing with the pressures of everyday life. People, not just people like me and you who are doing 5 million things trying to keep it going, but others that are still dealing with pressure just from the day in, day out job.
Yeah, and I think that I think there is the thing that kind of translates to me as I hear you talk about that is you're doing these techniques with the intention of calming yourself or with the intention of pushing those bad thoughts or that negative energy out and inviting positive energy in. But there's a lot of intention that's attached to those techniques. It's kind of a combination of both. It's not just the technique and it's not just the intention that you have, but because we can all have intentions to do stuff, but you have to pair the action with the intention in order to get the results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's amazing what the mind can do if you just start learning the practice and just try to push out whatever that pressure is, whatever that energy, negative energy buildup that you have.
What brought you joy this week?
The thing that brought me joy this week was spending time with my kids, especially this last week at the holiday, watching them get excited, spending time with their greater family, remembering those days myself as a young child and just wanting to get the family together. Living through my children and seeing them enjoying life makes me enjoy life.
I can definitely, that definitely resonates with me. It's one of the same things that really gives me joy is when I see my children enjoying life. I think that's just part of dad life, but I love it. So Ken, if folks that are listening to this and they would love to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would say the best way right now is LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I usually respond pretty quickly within 24 hours to people that send me messages and that. So I would say that's usually the best way to get a hold of me and, I'll respond accordingly.
Okay. And so we'll include a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes where folks can reach out to you. Now we'll get to the part of the program where we switch things around. I don't know if I told you this before, but I'll do this from time to time where now you become the interviewer and I am the interviewee. What questions do you have for me?
Where do you see the greatest risk in the profession of engineering in the next 5 to 10 years?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think the greatest risk that I can see is has to do with the adoption of AI and different technology, I think, in our field. And it's not so much that AI is going to take things over, but the best way that I've heard it said is that if you're an engineer, AI is not going to take your job. However, the person that's going to take your job is the engineer that understands how to leverage AI. That's going to be the biggest risk is for us to understand how can we leverage the emerging tools in the right way for the benefit of society. How can we leverage those tools to help us do our jobs?
Okay. I completely agree with you there. And the reason I say that is because I see the workforce issues, you know, with the Board Strategic Advisory Committee. A couple of years ago, we did a white paper on the workforce problems, the lack of engineers coming into the industry. And I completely agree because if you don't understand AI, AI is going to be that tool that helps us fix the shortage. And it's not going to take anybody's job because you still need to have that person double checking it. I use AI quite a bit. I know that unless you back check it, you could have a lot of problems.
Yes.
A lot. But it's also machine learning with AI. And so you got to use it several times, but there's still always that ability that you need to make sure as, you know, even a certifying engineer, certifying any AI design or whatever, you got to double check it because AI only is working in the confines that it knows. And there's always going to be that dynamic situation that AI, as of yet, cannot understand. And so I completely agree with you, and I love the answer.
So, Ken, I've really enjoyed our conversation. It's been amazing to hear the spark in your voice when you talked about volunteering and being on both sides of that in terms of a recipient of volunteering and then wanting to go out and make sure that you give back and how that seems like a core value for you. The other thing that stood out to me was that your whole process or approach to deepening the bench, you know, making sure that you're making space for other leaders so that they can grow. So you grow so that they can grow. And that continues to have a major impact on the companies that you work for, on the volunteer activities that you do, and our industry as a whole. So those are the two things that really stood out to me. And I guess the third thing would be being present. You talked about being present for your family, being present for your work, being present for yourself, being present for school. And so it's amazing just the centeredness that you have to be present in every moment.
I appreciate the conversation today. So thank you for having me. I feel still young in the industry, but the next generation needs to come up and we need to bring them up too with everybody. So we all got to rise together.
That's great. So I'm going to end this episode like I end every episode of the Engineer Your Success podcast. And that's this: many people know what to do, fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people follow through, do it, and build in the life of their dreams and really impacting the world. Ken, I want to thank you for being part of Select Few.
Oh, thank you.